This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is sharing the message that connection is crucial because good relationships are an essential and sometimes overlooked component of mental well-being. If your relationships could use some strengthening, a licensed therapist from Talkspace can help. Therapy can help you communicate better with loved ones, repair conflicts, and understand how to address loneliness and build community. It's easy to sign up. Just go to Talkspace.com and you'll be paired with a therapist within 2 days. You'll meet with your therapist online on your schedule. Plus, Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Make personal connections a priority and start today. If you're not covered by insurance, get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you today. Darren is on vacation this week. Just recapping the big story. Just listen to Mike Vrabel for the last half hour addressing the questions. They've had back-to-back days of no positive tests, but they have not been given the full clearance to get back to the building yet. They're hoping to do so tomorrow. They're hopeful. And, of course, another round of no positive tests would be the key to getting back into the building. So, with that in mind, we will monitor that situation. Still nothing from the league on everything that's happened to them, but they're hoping that the game will go on as scheduled against the Bills. We know that the Vanderbilt Commodores next have South Carolina on their slate. That's Saturday at 11 a.m., and it's time for our weekly chat with Derek Mason, the head coach of the Commodores. And, Coach, first and foremost, you probably were listening to Mike Vrabel, but I know you can relate to just the uncertainty, the challenges that this virus is for everybody, just waking up in the morning super early and waiting on test results and hoping for the best and then dealing with it, whatever comes your way.
Absolutely. I totally understand, you know, exactly what he's seen and exactly what he's gone through. I mean, it's difficult, it's challenging, but, you know, it's something that we're all dealing with right now. As a matter of fact, I just came over from getting my COVID test. So, you know, testing protocols are in full go. Guys, you sort of take your test, you know that it's coming back, fairly quickly, and so you just hope everybody gets to the other side, and it's always the waiting game because it's in between practices, it's coming off of a game, or it's heading into a game. So there's anxiety around testing, but you know what we're all trying to do is just make sure that we can keep everybody safe. And so I mean, we're constantly having to talk about all the things that matter, and a lot of that just has to do with like contact.
You know, I would imagine as we go forward, you know, the two things are true. Number one, you get to understand a lot more day in and day out what you have to do to stay safe. But at the same time, you have to not get complacent and let your guard drop because maybe you've stayed safe. You've taken so many tests so day after day, but you can't let your guard down at all against this thing.
You really can't. I thought we were moving along, and then all of a sudden it hit us, and it hit us when we had really let our guard down just a little bit. And so now, as an organization, our players, our staff, we're just constantly like having to remind each other. And I think the campus is taking some ownership in it, man, but our student athletes are taking a lot of ownership in what they do. I see our guys with their masks up. Guys have gaiters on, all the time. Most of our meetings are done via Zoom. We have some in-person meetings, but, just in small groups. And it's going to be that way. We want to get to a place where, we can call it normal, but right now it's really not now. We're still just having to stay on point and constantly remind each other that, You know, we've got to be better, and everybody's got to be able to be accountable to one another.
Well, let's talk about your team. You come off of the game against LSU, a good test for you guys. So give us, first of all, your overall thoughts. I know after Texas A&M, you really felt like you had a chance to win the game. You knew it was going to be a challenge with LSU coming off of the loss. But give me first the biggest positive and then maybe the biggest thing to work on as you work forward.
You know, the biggest positive coming out of the, you know, LSU game is understanding that we didn't play our best ball. I mean, like, we truly didn't. But seeing guys like Donovan Kaufman, you know, come alive in the return game, play well defensively. You know, watching our running backs, you know, run the ball, you know, consistently two weeks in a row, it's been something for us to say, okay, there's some pieces here, man, that we know are definitely moving in the right direction. There's been some individual performances, and there's been, you know, like, good things at times. But when I came off the weekend, just looking at where we were, we just have to, you know, grab what is. I mean, we have to be, you know, forward focused in the opportunities, man, to really get better in all the little areas. You know, offensively, man, there's a lot there to grab when we talk about the pass game and getting some healthy guys back, like James Bostic, Keon Brooks, you know, and Devin Body. Those guys are going to make a difference, you know, like, in what we do depth-wise, but just speed-wise. And hopefully, man, that jump starts where we really need to go, because we've had, you know, some things happen for us in spots, but not enough consistently. And when I look at us defensively, getting Jalen Mahoney back will be huge for us. Listen, Jalen, you know, like, a week ago, I mean, you saw some on the field, you know, communication, you know, issues that you generally don't see. And, you know, a lot of that just has to do with, you know, young guys or new guys being in and guys getting used to guys and doing it in the speed of the game. But from communication to team tackling to you know, being able to create a consistent pass rush, those are the things that we got to be able to grab. You know, special teams, we just have to continue to take those opportunities, man, to put points on the board, man. We haven't been as good as we want to be, man, but I've got full confidence in where we are, you know, with Pearson Cook. And sometimes, man, you just got to stay the course. So that's where we are right now. It's all about improvement. It's all about grabbing, you know, what there is to grab. Today was a takeoff Tuesday, and I thought these guys took the day and sort of ran with it, because there was a lot of competing going on. You know, you could tell guys had left it behind, and now what we got to do is, since we put together a good Tuesday, now move on to a Wednesday.
You know, there's still, it's kind of like last week. I think a lot of us that haven't watched the guys practice, maybe haven't followed all the details of recruiting and how long they've been there, but now we're seeing them on the field. This kid Bresnahan, I know you've known for a while that he's a guy that has flashed, you know, but he's gone through some injury history, and now he's getting a chance, and he looks like he's really going to be a strong player for you at tight end.
Yeah, Ben Bresnahan has got all the tools needed to be a dominant tight end in this conference. He can play in line as a blocking Y. He can play as a flex tight end. He knows how to work the middle of the field. He's a nuanced route runner. I mean, he's one of those guys who you don't care if he's on a safety, you don't care if he's on a corner, you don't care if he's matched up versus a backer. It doesn't matter. He's got the size, speed, and really, you know, football savvy to make some things happen. And you're just starting to see him scratch the surface. He got hurt as a freshman, like you mentioned. He tore his ACL early in his career. Spent last year just trying to find his way, but had a tremendous all season. Is extremely confident right now in the offense, and he's a target, you know, for our quarterback. And we all know, in the game of football, tight ends can be quarterback's best friends if they're nuanced, if they understand how to work the middle of the field, and they understand how to get open. And he knows how to do those things.
You know, it's interesting. You have more of a spread look to your offense now, but you still have the tight end a part of it. That seems to be sometimes. In fact, we were talking, I'm trying to think of who we were talking with, but the tight end sometimes is a tough evaluation for the NFL because so many schools aren't really using it very much. I know you've always valued that. So tell me how that comes together, more of a spread look, but still using a tight end.
Well, you know, my tight ends, are tough matchups. I mean, you're seeing more tight ends in the NFL, you know, make good money based on their ability to work the middle of the field, to be an inline blocker, and to be a matchup problem. You know, i.e., you know, Kittle, you know, over in San Fran, you see what's happening.
Sure.
With our guy in KC. I think you know, Zach Ertz in Philadelphia is one of the best in the league. Tight ends are tough matchups. You know, Gronkowski made it in vogue again. You know, like to be able to have those guys. You know, who can do all three. And I think now, you know, as you've seen offenses, you know, spread. You know, teams like New England or not New England, but Kansas City. You know, they feature Kelce. I mean, and when you watch him, whether he's outside, inside, inline blocker, okay, you always got to know where he is. And, you know, Ben is not there yet, but we've got four or five tight ends on this roster with, you know, Justin Ball, you know, being here, Joel DeCourcy. These guys, I mean, are playing now, but you're going to hear their names a lot. We haven't gotten to, like, the full arsenal of being able to utilize the tight end, but it's coming.
We're talking to Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach. He joins us every week at 1 o'clock here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. So you've talked a lot about your offense. Ken Seals, those who I want to key in on, your quarterback, your freshman quarterback, there was no dipping his toe in the water. It was an all-SEC schedule. You knew that this was going to be a tough situation, but how would you say through two games that he's handled it, not just from a statistic standpoint, but his overall poise of running this offense?
He's handled the football no differently than I expected him to. Again, he's mature. He likes practice, and he loves to play. And that's a combination that you want, you know, like from your starting quarterback. So, you know, that part of it is extremely good. I don't think he's really fazed by anything that happens on the field or competing against, you know, any of the teams that we're going to go against. I think, you know, the biggest thing for him now is in growing in the offense, making sure, man, that you take what the defense gives you. Okay, in certain moments, whether we're talking about, you know, red zone situational football, and or just making sure that you're not pressing to make it come to you. There's enough built-ins to this offense to where now, as he gets some more of his weapons back and we can truly spread the field and do some things in the run game and work the screen game, then I think, you know, his opportunities are going to be much more. But he's still got to learn, hey, look, I mean, just take what the defense gives you. Sometimes they're going to give you the home run, and sometimes they're going to give you, you know, 2 or 3 yards. Just take what the defense gives you. And he's learning from every opportunity he gets. The first two games have really shown him a lot in terms of where he needs to go. And now, you know, what he's got to do is just make the individual nuance changes to what we're doing in order to help him, you know, help us overall be successful offensively.
I've told you this before, you know, when we had an opportunity to meet your new offensive coordinator, Todd Fitch, that, you know, it, and I know you've said this, it seems like such a fit. And now that he's had the opportunity to work with a young quarterback, you mentioned opening up the offense because you're getting some players back from injury. But I know it's only two games, but do you feel like that now Coach Fitch is starting to maybe get comfortable with his players, they're getting comfortable with him, and now you can truly see what he can do as an offensive coach?
I do. I've got all the, you know, confidence in the world in Coach Fitch, and it's been, you know, been a journey and a little bit of a challenge just to be missing, you know, like some of these weapons, because you know, like when you don't have these guys, you know, the load falls to a couple of guys, and we're not quite at that point where you know it's just about a couple of guys. Every guy brings something different to the table, and so, and being able to have, you know, like more cards in your deck, you can play a better hand. And I think for him, he knows what he wants to do. But, you know, getting Keon Brooks back is going to be great. You know, getting those two wideouts, you know, man, back is going to be, you know, good, because now what we're going to be able to do is not only stretch you horizontally, but stretch you vertically. And speed matters. In the SEC, when you're trying to, you know, take the top off of a defense and get guys to respect you vertically, okay, it really opens up the horizontal game for both the tight end, okay, man, and some of these wideouts who can work the middle of the field. And we saw Cam get a couple of touches last week in the middle. And again, it's about people. And it's about players, okay? He's built this offense around players, and so you need the full gambit in order to be able to open it up the way you want to. But, you know, we're gonna stay at this thing. And there's a lot of football to be played. A great opportunity versus South Carolina this weekend, and that's sort of what we got to dive into and sort of, you know, forward focus, and our work on what we need to do this Saturday.
You said last night on the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher that you're hoping to have a firmer five on the offensive line. I know freshman Bradley Ashmore could factor into that. Are you hoping that he's one of those guys that can give you that set offensive line?
I think so. I mean, we've seen a good number of guys rotate through. Have had a chance to evaluate where they sit, and now it's going forward. It's just got to be that group of guys, and everybody else can roll in. If there's an injury, but the only way to get anybody comfortable, whether it's your quarterback or even the consistency of what we're doing, up front, is to make sure that those guys are playing together, communicating. It's about team. It's about that group of guys being able to trust one another, and that only gets built with reps. And I think the investment of reps, for what we've done so far, has really paid off in the run game. But when you look at where we're sitting in the pass game right now, okay, man, we need one or two more guys, to just take the job, step up, and let's ride with it. And I think we've got enough tape right now to be able to say what that looks like going forward.
Will Muschamp has been at this for a long time in this conference, and you mentioned South Carolina. Both of you looking for your first victory. What are some things that they're going to bring that will challenge your group, and what are some things where you think you have the advantage?
Yeah, you look at Will's teams are always going to be physical and tough. They work hard not to beat themselves. It's a ball control offense, man, but they got the ability, with Shai Smith and the fifth year quarterback. Hill to be able to be able to take the top off. They've got a strong ground game, that features a freshman running back and who's doing a really good job. He's physical. He runs downhill, and they're big up front. So they want to eat the clock, man. They want to beat you up a little bit, offensively and defensively, man. They've got guys at all three levels, whether it's corner, linebacker, and or on the defensive line that are splash players. They can make some plays. So, we're going to have to, play well in special teams. I think special teams could be a difference maker in this ball game. And after showing up some things and really looking at, how we want to attack these guys, there's some things in the special teams game that I think we can get after them with. And offensively and defensively, on defense we got to do less better. Okay, we're honed in on the details. It's not about the number of calls you have, it's about the efficiency of calls and how well we can play them. So, just to do your job mantra has got to be able to be first and foremost for the defense. And then offensively, I think getting guys back and being able to get from personnel groups to open sets to tempo to, being able to be physical in the red zone and maybe taking a little air out of the ball in the red zone can really help us. So that's where we sit right now. I think those are the keys to this ball game. And we've got to play complementary football in all three phases.
Well, Coach, we're looking forward to it Saturday at 11. Good luck getting on in that win column, and we'll be watching.
And what helmets you got this week? Those last week were awesome.
Man, my son, he was so excited. When he saw those helmets, he really had a reaction. It was awesome.
You know what? I'll try to get you a mini helmet when they come out. So
okay.
Yes.
With that being said, I haven't looked at the uniform drop this week, but I just want to drop some good football. The uniform will take care of itself. So we'll see what happens. I look forward to seeing people or everybody on Saturday. Let's take care and anchor down.
All right. That is Coach Derek Mason, his team in action Saturday at 11 against South Carolina. When we come back, it'll be Mitch after Mason, Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. We'll talk a little college football with him, and then we will get you caught up on the Mike Vrabel press conference a little later. Meanwhile, Ronald Acuna has done it again, Chase, and the Braves are off to a good start against the Marlins.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. A leadoff homer I don't know how many that is now for him, but he leads it off, and it was a good first inning by Max Fried mowing him down. I don't think he threw a ball that entire half inning, but the Braves lead 1-0 with a man on and two outs.
Acuna's pretty good. When we come back, we'll talk a little college football. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Welcome back to Darren Adonik and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. The Marlins have just tied it on a solo shot. They have answered Ronald Acuna's home run. And it is Mr. Rojas, the shortstop. I always want to say Mel Rojas. He used to be a relief pitcher, but it is Miguel Rojas, who actually had a great short season there for the Marlins. He's one of the no-names that has been a key for Don Mattingly's squad. Somebody who's watched Don Mattingly play a lot of games as a Yankee fan growing up is Mitch Light, who is ready to talk some college football with us. Mitch, we're calling your segment Mitch After Mason. We feel like it has a nice ring to it. Do you approve of this?
Yeah, I think so. It's got a decent ring to it. I don't know if Coach Mason, you know, approves. I don't know if he needs to approve. But, I can handle that. It's not bad.
So, Mitch, we just talked to Coach Mason about the ups and downs of the first 2 weeks. And of your observation, knowing that program the way you do, after two games, are you more pleasantly surprised with what you've seen? Are you a little worried about what's coming? Because they're now going into a section of their schedule where if they're going to have success, these are the teams that you should match up a little bit better with. You knew it was going to be tough the first two games against Texas A&M and LSU. But from here, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out more over the next few weeks about how competitive this team can be. There were things to like and things to be really concerned about in the first few weeks. This is not breaking ground, but my biggest concern before the season was not the quarterback, it was the offensive line, because can't get anything done up front on the offensive line, you've almost got no hope offensively. And I would say I've been pleasantly surprised by the offensive line. I think we talked last week. I thought they held up for about three quarters in the Texas A&M game, and then maybe got a little fatigued. I think they went with all five guys, same five guys in the offensive line in the Texas A&M game. Rotated a little bit, I think, at right tackle.
I think they used six. Is that right, for the most part?
Six, I believe, in the LSU game. So not using a lot of bodies there, but they're getting enough of a push, and Javion Marlow is doing a good job running the ball. So I guess I'm pleasantly surprised with the offense's ability to run the ball, but clearly need to make more plays down the field. Ken Seals has shown some good things, and he's shown some things you would expect from a freshman. You know, little things, I thought, Willie. Like, I don't remember the exact situation, but in the first half, I think Vanderbilt got to about midfield. It was first down and had a little swing pass opportunity where if it's completed, it's at least 8 yards. You're setting up a second and two. Well, the throw was a little out in front of the receiver, and second and 10 instead. And I think the drive stalled. And then on that fourth down play, again, I think near midfield or about the 40-yard line, they missed the receiver, just threw it behind him a little bit. And just when you have the issues that Vanderbilt has, you can't make mistakes like that. So I think there's, you know, a lot of room for this offense to grow. I think from a Vanderbilt standpoint, it'll be nice to play a team without as much talent as Texas A&M and LSU defensively. Now, both of those teams have had issues in other games this year, but there's no doubt that from a speed, size, and just overall talent, those are two of the better, you know, more talented teams in the league.
So, Mitch, we had this discussion earlier in the week. Tennessee has now won 8 straight games. 6 of them are conference games. One of the others is the bowl game against the Power 5. None of the wins jump out at you as this amazing win against a top 5 team or anything. But it reminded me a lot of the discussion, because there are some people who are like, well, they haven't beaten anybody yet. But it reminds me some of James Franklin's years, especially the back-to-back 9-4s, where they weren't only winning the games against the average to below average teams in the league, but in many cases they were throttling those teams. Tennessee's beating handily of Missouri, to me, is a point of graduation. There's a middle ground, and it's nothing to sneeze at, where you get to the point where if there's a team that doesn't bring much to the table and you smoke that team, there's a lot to be said for that. Maybe it's not where you want to end up eventually if you're Tennessee, but they've graduated out of losing to the likes of Georgia State.
Yeah, my thoughts exactly. You know, you can poke holes in their winning streak last year, as people did. You know, looking at it, you know, beat Kentucky by 4, Missouri by 4, Vanderbilt by 18, scored late to pull away there, then the Indiana comeback. So, you know, you give them credit for winning those games, but it's fair to point out that they weren't the most impressive. And that's what I would say about college football. That's why we dive into stats and results and scores, because you don't play that many games. And, you know, not all 8-4 teams are created equally, not all 6-6 teams. But I think you make the good point that Tennessee just looks like a better team in the first two games this year than they did last year, and it starts up front. You know, if you're going to ask coaches, where do you want to be best on the field? I think every coach would want to say, I want to have the best quarterback. But after that, they say, I want to be probably the best on the offensive line in Tennessee. And you saw this coming. If you pay attention to recruiting, and recruiting's not everything, but they were just getting too many commitments from five-star offensive linemen for the offensive line not to be good at some point, and we're seeing it. But I don't want to contradict myself here because, as you know, Willie, love talking about stats. From a stats standpoint, Tennessee only outgained Missouri 5.7 yards per play to 5.5. Now, I know Missouri, you know, moved the ball some in the second half, but watching that game, it just Tennessee seemed to dominate. So that's one game where I would almost throw those stats out because Tennessee was clearly the better team. And while they didn't totally pull away, you know, until the fourth quarter, they were in control pretty much the entire game.
I agree. They were sort of on cruise control there. So, yeah, that is the beauty of the stats, and that's where maybe analytics come in, balancing and putting in context the 5.7 versus the 5.5. Let's bounce around the league here. Arkansas now has taken Georgia pretty deep into the third quarter before they kind of collapsed. And so the final score may not be really indicative of what they accomplished in that game. Then they come back and get a really nice win last Saturday. That's as positive stuff as you've seen out of Arkansas in a good while there. How good are they?
Yeah, I looked this up. Only talking about stats. Arkansas is only the sixth team in the last 20 years, SEC team, to win a conference road game, in which it had 275 yards of offense and gave up 400 or more. So I just looking at the box score, you know, you look and you think Mississippi State wins that game. They took advantage of some turnovers. They had a really good defensive game plan. They dropped a lot of guys in coverage. And I don't know if this is going to be a blueprint or what have you, but Bill Connolly on ESPN.com had an interesting point earlier. He said Barry Odom, who's now the defensive coordinator at Arkansas, was, you know, played at Missouri and was on some of Gary Pinkel's staffs back in the Big 12 days. And Missouri always did well and always had a good game plan for Mike Leach's Texas Tech teams. And if you follow Mike Leach, he'll even tell you his offense hasn't changed over the years. They do the same thing. They've done it for years. And clearly Arkansas had a good game plan for it and then took advantage of some opportunities. You know, Arkansas didn't really do much offensively in the second half. You look at their drive charts, a lot of three and outs. They were just opportunistic. Then obviously Mississippi State blew that punt late in the game, but there was no guarantee they were going to come back and win. So obviously it's a huge win for a first-year coach and Sam Pittman. Really could not be off to a better start. You know, obviously 2-0 is better than 1-1, but playing Georgia well and then winning on the road the week after Mississippi State, what they did to LSU, great start for the Sam Pittman era.
Well, let's talk Georgia because I know a lot of Tennessee fans are curious, how will they stack up? But let's specify or let's hone in on the quarterback situation because you have this long list of guys that Georgia had as candidates to jump in there and be the next guy, the post Jake Fromm, after having both Fromm and Fields at one time, and all these guys for one reason or another kind of fall off the wagon. And here is Stetson Bennett, and I think this is a great quote by Kirby Smart. Coaches really appreciate this, right? He didn't cry, pout, transfer, do anything, have his parents call, which many coaches can relate to. And he didn't do any of that. He just kept working, and he got the opportunity. So you kind of root for a guy like Stetson Bennett on one level, right? You love to see guys like that wade through everything when they're not supposed to be the guy. But at the same time, I think there's still probably some skeptics saying, okay, how far can you go with a guy like that?
Yeah, well, I will correct Kirby one thing. He did transfer. He just transferred back. He went to junior college. Plenty of year, but, point taken. Yeah, it's a great story. No doubt about it. He was good. That offense was good against Auburn. They had 9 possessions in the game, only 1 3 and out on the first of the game. They dominated that game statistically. They dominated on the field. Their defense is really, really good, maybe the best in the league. That's going to be a great – I'm looking forward to watching that offensive line at Tennessee against that defensive front of Georgia. That's going to be the game. And there's a lot of ways to look at this game. I think Georgia's still the better team, but which kind of quarterback plays better? Stetson Bennett, it was a ideal circumstances for him. I mean, not saying there wasn't pressure, but he comes in off the bench as the backup quarterback at Arkansas, a game that, that Georgia has the talent advantage, and once they pulled ahead, you could kind of sense that Arkansas wasn't going to score. And then the fact that they jumped on Auburn quickly, he could settle in. He didn't have to make important throws while they were down. That's what I'll be watching this week. Let's say Tennessee gets up 10-0, 7-0, or 14-3 or something, and there's a little bit of pressure on that offense, and he has to make some big throws. That'll be the first time, the real litmus test, to see if this is a guy that can win them an SEC East championship or even further when he's put in some really uncomfortable spots.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, Mitch after Mason, here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So down in College Station right now, is there panic, or is it, okay, they went up against Alabama, Alabama's really good, there's still some things that Texas A&M's trying to figure out, or should there be major concern for the Aggies right now?
Chase, you're asking an SEC fan base not to panic. So first of all, you need to.
Good luck with that.
That's not going to happen. Not panicking. I think when they hire Jimbo, and I know Texas A&M well, I do a radio show down there weekly. I've done it for years, so I think I talk to the host, and I kind of know what the fans are thinking down there. They hired Jimbo Fisher. It was the greatest day of Texas A&M sports history. It was snap our fingers. We're going to win big. You ask them where they expected to be in 3 years, this is probably not where they thought they would be. I think there was immense pressure on them in this game against Florida. Just losing at home is not part of the formula for year three of Jimbo Fisher. Is there pressure on Jimbo Fisher? Yes, but not from a job. I mean, no hot seat, to put aside the whole pandemic and finances and stuff like that. He's got a guaranteed contract for 10 years. He would have to go, in my opinion, 8-4 or worse 3 years in a row, really, to be legitimately in the hot seat there. But there's pressure because they have not looked good. That Alabama game, they had that little brief flurry that got them back in the game, I think, in the second quarter, but they were pretty much dominated. And, again, that's not what you sign up for when you – I always say even before they gave Jimbo that contract, I said, you don't spend $600 or $500 million in facilities to go 8-4 every year.
Well, to me, they're gonna drop to 1-2 this week, because I'm saying right now, I'm a believer in Florida. I like what I've seen the first 2 weeks. Kyle Trask is living up to the part, and Dan Mullen has that thing clicking right now. So I think Florida wins. And you tell me if you agree or disagree with this. In the SEC as a whole, Florida is really the only team that I think matches up with Alabama in a potential SEC championship game.
Well, I think they can score. That's the key. And Alabama has, the DNA of that program has changed. They're still good defensively, but they're not 5, 6, 7 years ago Alabama defense where they're holding you to 2 yards of play. They'll give up some yards. They'll give up some points. So you have, but they're going to score. Their offense has been phenomenal this year. You have to be able to outscore Alabama in an SEC championship game. And so I would agree on that standpoint. Florida out of the East, if you're giving me one offense out of the East to score points in Alabama, it's clearly going to be Florida. Now, Florida's defense hasn't been great so far. I think this is going to be a really nice test for them at Texas A&M. Florida's defense doesn't need to be great for them to win the SEC East. It needs to be great for them to win an SEC championship, though.
And go ahead, Willie.
No, go ahead, Chase.
I was just going to ask one more about Ole Miss. I know they got their first win under Lane Kiffin. in a thriller against Kentucky. Very wacky game, but a win is a win. Obviously going to be a big test for them. He said nice things about Nick Saban and his time at Alabama. I think that this is one of those matchups that if it were a normal year, and maybe after he has a year or two under his belt at Ole Miss, that even if he doesn't have the best team, that this is a team that could steal one. I don't see it this year, but what do you make of that matchup?
It's going to be fun because they have, Kentucky's a pretty good defensive team, and they went up and down the field. To me, the story of Ole Miss has been the quarterback situation, where I was a big John Rice Plumlee fan, enjoyed watching him play last year. It was fun, and thought he would be the starting quarterback this year, but it's pretty much been the Matt Corral show. He was 24 of 29 for 320, four touchdowns, no interceptions, rushed for 59 yards on the road. It does, against a good defense. It doesn't get much better than that. And they're a team that, aside from Elijah Moore, they did not have really proven playmakers coming back at wide receiver. They have really good running backs. Jerrion Ealy, Snoop Connor. I thought that's why they were going to go with Plumlee, just kind of run the ball, be kind of a, sort of like Kentucky was last year almost, where they just found different ways to run the ball. But they're throwing it all over the place. I think this Alabama game has a chance to be a 65, 38, 42 type game. I think there's going to be a ton of points. Whatever the over is, I bet it's a high over, put it that way. I think it's going to be hard to beat LSU Mississippi State from 2 weeks ago, but I think it's going to be one of the most fun games of the year at the SEC.
Well, that's what we're looking for. Fun. And the last couple of weeks with the SEC going, it has been fun to have those guys back out there. Mitch, thanks for your insight as always. Good luck to your Yankees tonight. They're looking good.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice to see. I was watching the game, and right after the grand slam, gave my son a high five, and he said, "I'm going to bed." So five run lead in the ninth was good enough for him. So thank you, Willie.
Yes.
Mitch, 68.5. That's the over under for Alabama Ole Miss.
Ooh, I would go over. I think. I knew Chase would come up with the number there.
I got
Thank you.
Chase has access to a lot of numbers. Mitch, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
All right, when we come back, we will recap what has happened with the Titans today. No positive tests for a second straight week. Mike Vrabel talked to the media. We'll tell you where they are right now when we come back. This is Darren Donick and Chase on 102.5 The Game. One Braves and Marlins in Game 1 of the Division Series at Minute Maid Park. Solo shots by Ronald Acuna and Miguel Rojas, the scoring so far. So isn't that the contrast? The name-recognized young superstar and then the guy like, who? Miguel Rojas? Like, unless you're in a National League-only fantasy league like I am, you probably don't know Miguel Rojas. But that's where they are. Let's get to the Titans. As we come down the home stretch, and then we'll turn it over to Jared and the GM. They'll have very extensive coverage of what happened today. Mike Vrabel, facing the media for the first time in a couple of days, did not react to the media reports, namely the one by Adam Schefter, that were very accusatory of the Titans and how they handled the situation. Did they break the protocols? Mike Vrabel, while not reacting to any specifics, did say, "I stand by our organization that we followed the protocols." In fact, Elijah, do you have that sound clip in particular?
Yeah, I think it was Jared that asked the question.
I think it was, too, that Jared actually asked two very good questions that I thought that really shed some light on where they are right now in terms of the investigation itself, because Mike Vrabel went to the microphone without really knowing what the NFL has in store for them or doesn't have in store with them.
Yeah, Mike, I know you said you didn't want to get into what media was reporting about the possible protocols, but after meeting with the league and reviewing the contact tracing and surveillance footage and things of that magnitude, how comfortable do you feel that you guys were handling the protocols correctly?
Well, I think I stand by, our efforts as an organization, as a team, in following the protocols that were in place. John and I put a lot of thought into it. We're going to continue to do everything that we can to make sure that, as we enter back into this building, that things are safe and the players are comfortable and that their, you know, health and well-being is at the forefront.
So he said, not overly emphatically, you know, like pounding his fist on the desk, we followed the protocols. He said, I stand by what we did, that they did follow the protocols. And he was asked, do you expect the league to put something out later this week or anytime soon about the findings? They came into Nashville, the Players Association as well. Nothing has been announced yet. He said, I don't expect anything either way. In other words, his focus is on just trying to get the team back on the field. And along that line, Chase, he did say that the biggest thing would be another round of no positive tests. That's obvious, right?
Right.
But he was not able to say today for sure they'll be in the facility tomorrow.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I think he kind of knew as much as we did. He referenced, you know, 4:30 in the morning is usually when he gets that info.
I hope he knows more than we did.
Yeah, there were things that I felt like he didn't. Like, I don't think he knows the league's timeline. I think he knows that they have to have another round of testing tomorrow, and if they test negative, then they'll probably be let back in. But he doesn't know for sure until he gets the go-ahead from the league. So he's kind of at their mercy right now for that. So, I think he has answered this the best he can. I can tell there's frustration. There should be some frustration, whether it's frustration with just the situation in general, frustration with his team, with his staff, that they if they got complacent or what have you. I get that. There is emotion involved in this. Another question that was asked that I thought was a good one was the, you know, mentally, because it's not just the physical part of this, but mentally, do you think your team will be all there and ready to go to play Buffalo? And he felt like that they've handled it the best that they can, that from that standpoint, that, you know, they've had good meetings. They haven't been able to be together. It is the middle of the season. So that's a tough ask for any team at any level, but he feels like that his guys were prepared enough to know that this could be a possibility of happening. It happened to them and now they have to face it. And so I do think that's important to look at. You know, where is this team from a mental standpoint when they get back in the facility and they hit the field on Sunday against Buffalo?
Right. I really believe in his ability to work the mental side of it. I think he's pretty good at that. I think that's one of his best
qualities.
I would agree. And I think the other thing that he mentioned that I think is maybe the bigger challenge is the fitness level. You know, on your own, you haven't been able to gather. You certainly haven't been able to practice together. So that's got to take its toll, not only on the cohesiveness of the units, but also just your physical fitness level. So I think you're dealing with a lot of layers of the physical part of it. Hopefully they'll have the mental part of it as sharp as it can be, because they have been meeting virtually. And so they've been preparing for the game that way. But on the physical side, I think that's a big, big question mark. But we'll see if they can sort of circle the wagons on that thing, on that part of it. Offered nothing on the injured players. In fact, got kind of sarcastic with John Glennon when he asked about it. We expected as much, not anything against Josh, but whoever would have asked the question would have gotten the same answer there. So, it's interesting. They have some position groups. He mentioned that there would be some people on the practice field that would be doing double duty just because they're low on numbers of defensive backs and wide receivers.
Yeah.
And I see that, coincidentally, Ian Rappaport has reported that the 49ers are releasing Mohamed Sanu, veteran wide receiver. I don't know if that's of interest, just a live body that's done some things in the league. But I think it would be hard. You'd be hard-pressed to bring him in, make sure he's up to speed on everything to play in a game. And then you add the layer of, because he was kind of vague when asked about any new protocols about bringing players in. I mean, you got to replace all these players, right? They're not going to be available.
Right.
So how do you replenish, especially if there's tougher hurdles to cross to get everybody acclimated and in?
Well, I think for this week, you just have to go with the practice squad. I mean, you got to go with the guys.
He sort of hinted at that, right?
Chester Rogers is a
receiver. Roll with what you got.
I mean, they have some guys that they can plug in. I mean, it's what they're going to have to do. And Marlins up 3-1 in the top of the third.
Long way to go, Chase. Don't panic yet.
It's
not 1997 yet.
But it's getting one game closer.
Ooh, boy. Well, we'll see. Long way to go. All right, Jared and the GM coming up next. Jared will have, I'm sure, a detailed breakdown of the press conference, insights from Floyd Reese, lots of good stuff coming. We're back with you tomorrow at 10 here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.